So, Bezos Hashem, we're going to continue our discussion from last week, but from the perspective of Parshas Lech Lecha. So, we're gonna continue our doing Parsha, but you'll see, I hope, that. We'll be able to continue what we discussed last time. So last week we talked about we were talking about Torah and science, and we were discussing how to address places in the Torah that seem to be giving you scientific information. How should you look at that information? The truth is, it's not just scientific information. There are many details in the Torah that you wonder why they are there. Last week's parsha, when you were trying to figure out Rashi's complicated cheshbon about the timeline of the Teva, which is doubly complicated because it could be in conceivably two different months, and might be wondering, why is it important to know exactly which date it started and which day it stopped and which day they took off the roof and which day they took out the ground was dry? Why is this important? And this is especially relevant because, like we discussed last week, we have to remember when learning what the Torah is about, what the purpose is. So how do these details relate to that? The Zohar powerfully expresses this notion that there's little value in knowing, maybe even interesting, historical facts when it talks about, in last week's Parsha, the fact that the Teva rested on Har Ararat. And the Zohar basically asks, who cares whether it landed on this mountain or that mountain? You could see that here in your Makor sheets. We'll just take a look. It's a very powerful Zohar. Ha oraisa de'i klala ilah. Af agav denafek minachat sipor be'alma. Va'ade lo asi lachza ala hu sipor. Ela lachza milen ilayin. V'razin ilayin. De'lo lamed al atzmo yatza. Ela lamed al haklal kulo yatza. Begin dehu sipor de oraisa, oahu uvda, afagav dehu nafka miklala de oraisa, lav lachza al garmei nafik, bilvad, el lachza al hahu klala ilah de oraisa, kelo nafak. So when you have a story in the Torah, and especially a detail in the story, it's not because that particular detail is important to know as a historical piece of information, but it's part of the broader goal of the Torah. It's teaching us something that's much broader. And we have an example here. Kagon, hai dechsev, v'atanach ha-teva b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, v'shivasar yom l'chodesh al har-e-ararat. V'adai ha-haikra mechlala de'oraisa nafik. V'asi b'sipor de'alma, my ichbislan, ishar behai, o behai, daha, the asar chad lishri. Who cares where the Teva rested? It had to rest somewhere. So, what difference make it that landed on Mount Everest or Mount Ararat or Mount St. Helens? Who cares? It rested. There's no value in knowing that piece of information. It's not a history book that it's important to know. Elalamed ala klal kulo yatza. So it's teaching me something broader that relates to Torah and its broader agenda and its broader principles and the like. A person may not figure it out. The Zohar teaches us these types of things. But even if you don't know exactly what we're meant to learn from the fact that the Teva rested on Har Ararat, it's something. It's something beyond just a factoid. So the Zakayan Inon Yisrael, this Yayiv Lahu Oraisa Ilah, Oraisa de Kashut. Klal Yisrael were Zocha to get the Torah, the heavenly Torah, the elevated Torah, the true Torah. Uman de Amar de Ahusipura de Oraisa Lachzal, Ahusipur Bilbad Kasi, Tipechuche, someone who goes ahead and says that the stories in the Torah are just about the stories. They're just telling you the stories. And the details in the stories are nothing other than that, details in the stories. You know, when you write fiction, so it's important to give details, even though you could say, what difference does it make? It's made up. But still, a good fiction piece mentions that, might mention that the character lived in Maple Street. Who cares where they lived? The whole thing is made up. Okay. But that's a convention of literature, makes it more interesting to know some details. So if you say the same thing about Torah, I mean, even if you say Torah is true, so, but why did it mention Harei Ararat? It's just part of the story, just a detail in the story. We want to know the story. It's important to know there's detail. So you should be cursed. What's so bad about it? Because then you're missing the boat. And the Zohar puts this very powerfully. De'ihachi, lav ihi oraisa ilah, oraisa dekshot. Then it wouldn't be an elevated Torah, an honest Torah. It's interesting. The first point I understand that it wouldn't be a oraisa ilah, right? Because who cares if it's not holy? Like with respect to the kedusha of the Torah, I understand why this detail would be irrelevant. But why does it mean it's not honest? Other rabbi would say it's more honest, right? If it has details, certainly the details are true, right? Certainly the Teva did land on Harei Ararat. So that's honest. Good. It's honest. So you see that what the Zohar means when it's saying Oraisa Dikshot, an honest Torah, it doesn't just mean honest in a sense like a history book is honest if it gets the details correctly. It's something much deeper than that. Let's try to understand that. Let's read on first. Elvadai oraisa kedisha ilah ihi oraisa dikshot. In other words, the Torah is kedosha, it's ilah, and therefore it's kshot. It's the honesty of Torah stems from its holiness. And therefore, if with respect to its being oraisa kedisha ilah, there is no significance. You just say that Harei Ararat is just a detail in the story, and there's no place for that in Oraisa Kedisha Ilah. So there's also no place in it for it in Oraisa Kshot. So therefore, the Zohar tells us that passages such as these are very important because they teach us deep secrets. And we can only perceive the message of the Torah when we dig beneath the surface. And the Zohar continues. Next paragraph. Tachazi melech bas v'dam, lav yikra dilehu, lishtai mila dehadyota, kol shekein lemichtav lei. A king, a melech bas v'dam. So it's beneath him to talk about divrei hadyot, to talk about silly things, and certainly to write them. The king was writing a proclamation or some type of document to include Narishkeit that's beneath him. V'isalak b'daitecha d'malka ila kedusha kudsha brichu lo have le milin kedishin l'michta v'l'mevan minayu raisa el'i k'nish k'nis kol milin d'hadyote k'gon milin d'esa. Like, what's going on? So somebody who thinks that this story of the detail of Harei Ararat, it's just a detail. It's like a story. It's almost like, you know, looking at the Torah as mili dehadyot, as like folk literature or something like that. Rachman al-Islan. There's so many things in the Torah that we can't understand why they're there. Whether it's where the Teva landed or the lineage of Esav, Milan de Hagar, the lineage of Hagar in that story, Milan de Lavan, Biakov, right? They're words. Why do we need the words of Hagar, the words of Esav, the words of Lavan, of Rishayim, Milan to Ason of the donkey, Milan to Bilam, Milan to Balak, Milan to Zimri, Bekanis Leho, Bechal Shar Sipurin de Ksivin, the Avid Minayu Rice. Oh, God just like took a bunch of folk tales and he made a Torah. Ihachi Amai Ikri Taurus Emes. If that were true, just a bunch of folk tales, then it wouldn't be Taurus Emes. It wouldn't be Taurus Hashem Tamima. It wouldn't be Edes Hashem Ne'amaneh. It wouldn't be Pekudei Hashem Yesharim. It wouldn't be Mitzvot Hashem Ba'ara. It wouldn't be Yiras Hashem Tahor. It wouldn't be Mishpatei Hashem Emes. V'ksiv ha'nechamadu mizav mipaz rav. Ilin inun milid oraisa. Elevadei oraisa kedisha ila ihu. Oraisa dekshot. Taurus Hashem Tamima. V'chol mila umila asya achza'a milin ilayin. Every word in the Torah is to teach us these elevated things, the holy things. And therefore, when you have a detail in the story, it's not just a show about the story itself. So what is he saying? It's not dignified for a human king to engage in trivial conversations, much less write them down. So certainly, that would be inconceivable for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's interesting, Agav. The Rambam, when he presents the eighth of his Yud Gimel Ikar Yamuna, the Torah Min HaShamayim, also emphasizes the notion that every letter, every word of Torah is something that contains divine and profound wisdom. Let's look over here. Kol Os Sheba, Yesh B'Chachmos V'Niflaos L'mi Shevinu Hashem, V'lo Tusag Tachlis Chachmasa. We may not understand, but we should appreciate. It's an Ikar Emunah, like we saw in the Zohar, that every single word contains profound wisdom. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about Menashe, how he made fun of the certain details in the Torah. Why are they relevant? That's a reflection of an absolute misunderstanding of the Torah. And thus the Rambam concludes, he says, so what is left to do other than to daven that we should understand? Gali nai babita niflos mitarasecha. It's interesting also, Agav, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, in Chelek Gimel Perek Nun, does suggest, he goes through all the parshios in the Torah that seem to be irrelevant, like, let's say, the lineage base of, and he tells you, from a rational perspective, why these are important. So let's say in terms of the lineage of Esav, he says, it's important to know that Amalek is the progeny of Esav, but it's only Amalek that has to be destroyed, not any of his other children. So on a level of rational understanding, that we could explain why certain parshios exist. Well, the Zohar is telling us, and I think what the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayos is alluding to, is there's also deeper explanations. So going back to the Zohar, so what is it saying? It's saying that not only is it, if we thought that the details, like the placement of the teva, were just there as part of the story, it wouldn't just be that it's not a holy Torah, but it wouldn't even be an emes dika Torah, the way Torah is truly emes lamito. And this, by the way, explains many things, like ein muktam u'muchar b'Torah. In other words, if your goal is to present history, then you'll go in chronological order for the most part. If your goal is to present sanctified ideas, so you might sacrifice with respect to chronology, in order to convey that details, that message. Now, this is a very important yesod, but I think there's something even deeper here that will bring us to an understanding of Parshas Lech Lecha. But let's go back for just one more moment to Parshas Noach. The pasuk says, when Hashem commands a Noach to build a teva, say lecha teva asa atzei gofer, kidim tasa asa teva, v'chafarta usa mibayis umichutz bakofer. So Rashi notes, why is it that the teva of Noach was covered both on the inside and the outside with pitch, whereas the Teva of Moshe was only covered on the outside. Rashi explains, "V'tevaso shel Moshe al yedei shehayu hamayim tashim, daya b'chomer mibifnim v'zefes mibachutz." The Ode, "Kedei shel yariach oso tzadik reach ra shel zefes." So there's two reasons. Number one is look at the conditions. The Teva was subject to this tumultuous storm, so it needed to be waterproof from the inside and the outside. Whereas Moshe's Teva was just resting in the reeds, so outside external waterproofing was sufficient. That's answer one. Answer two, Shelo yariach oso hatzadik, that Hashem wanted to protect Moshe from the smell of tar, and therefore it wasn't waterproofed on the inside. So there's an obvious problem here, which is that if the first answer is correct, l'chora, there's no place for the second answer. In other words, once it is the case that you would need to waterproof the Teva of Noach from the inside and the outside, because otherwise it would sink. And there was no need in the case of Moshe's. So then there should be no basis for the second answer. It has nothing to do with Reach, simply Metzius. You have to know the Metzius. So the answer is Pashut. It's what we said last week, that you have to look at things from a dual perspective. Rashi is telling you here the Siba and the Siba Sasiba. The Siba might be the Metzius, but you can't just look at the world from that perspective. And it's true for a million Rashis and Chazals, and in general, this is a Mafteach Gadol for understanding, for dealing with Pshat and Drash. The Torah wants us to look at the Siba Sasiba. Thus, as the Maharal said, when it comes to the rainbow, for example, the Siba of the rainbow might be a refraction of light, but the Torah is telling us the Siba Sasiba. Go back to the Maharal for a moment. This is another example from the Maharal we saw last week. We didn't read it. Let's talk about Ramach Evar Moshe Sagidim. Kila Adam El Tsuraso Misbar Ivarav Yesh Siba Tivit. You could study biology and you could study anatomy, and you'll know what the reason for the limbs are and what they represent and how many there are and the like. And that's true. That's the Siba. And that's the right perspective for a biologist to take. Shane Suffolk. You should appreciate that there's much more to the human body than just the anatomy, Shabo. The Pasuk in Iov says that if you want to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the human body. Mibsaria chazeloka. And the Zohar explains that that's because everything in the human body is a spiritual parallel. Now is not the time to go into it, but if you look at those diagrams of the spheros and how they connect to the body, that's what it's all about. Mibsaria chazeloka. You want to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the body. Why? Because Vayivra Elokim es Adam b'tzalmo b'tzalem Elokim bara oso. Amnam gam sibas asiba shenitna shenasnu heim lo amdu al divrayim lavin divrayim ki rachaku mimenu. So the scientists see the Torah's discussion of the siba and the siba asiba. They don't understand it. Zeki lachu divrayim b'havana rishona, because they understand it superficially. They think the Torah is trying to give a scientific explanation. Like we saw in the Zohar, they don't see the emistikite in it. So there's two ways to look at everything. There's the Siba and there's the Siba Sasiba. And even after you know the Siba, there's more to discover. I'll tell you a funny story. My wife, when she was one of her first days in seminary, so she was in a class with the Gemarit Leibowitz. They were learning Sefer Yehoshua. There's Bekias, and she sort of mentioned in passing, it's interesting that when the sea split for Yehoshua, the Pasuk says it just split, there was one wall. Whereas when Klal Yisrael crossed Yamsuf, so there were two walls. It's interesting, why is it that in one case it's one wall, one case it's two walls? So my wife raised her hand and she said, one second, you know, isn't that because there was a river? If you want to stop a river, so you don't need to stop it in both directions. It's simply sufficient to stop it in one way. Whereas if you're crossing a sea, so in order to go through dry land, you need a wall on both sides. So she told her, off the cuff, she said, Dvarim gedolim einem b'mikra. And she was right. In other words, that's true. That's the Siba, it's Pashut. But you need a Siba, so Siba, especially if the Torah says it and stresses it. Why does the Torah tell you that detail? Again, anyone could figure it out. And this is true not just with respect to looking at Torah, but how we look at life. My wife told me that she was reading an interview of Rav Asher Weiss over Sukkot. And they asked him, I guess, you know, why are there so many tragedies about people being crushed, Meron, and Surfside, etc. And he said, you know, some people go ahead and they respond by looking at, say, okay, look, there are architectural flaws and we have to fix those and that's the problem. And other people are like, you know, this is an act of God and we have to look at the lessons and we have to do tshuva, etc. And the Torah says both of those perspectives are incomplete. You have to look for the Siba, but you also have to look for the Siba Sasiba. You can't stop at the Siba. There's a very interesting Sefer HaIkrim, which I think could be explained in this light. It's an next source. Sefer HaIkrim says a fascinating thing. He says, you'll never find scientists becoming prophets. Ha'emuna b'shem yisbarach, it's a Maimer Aleph, Perek Chaf Aleph, Hamuna B'Shem Yisbaruch V'Sorasso, Hi HaMeviya Es HaAdam El Atzlach HaNitzchis V'Al Dveikus HaNevesh B'Davar HaRuchani. Emuna Hashem will bring you to eternal Hatzlacha and to Dveikus B'Davar HaRuchani. It will allow you to have Shaychus to Ruchnias. And Shaychus to Ruchnias doesn't just mean understanding things that are Ruchniastic, but it's Nitzchias, because Nitzchias is that Ruchnias. The Nitzchias is a Ruchniastic and Nitzchias. It's not a Gashmiastic and Nitzchias. Like the Rambam says, what Olam Haba is and why it's a natural consequence of understanding God. V'zeh davar ema imes oso hanisayon. Lefima sheba'a bo hakabala hanimshachas. Ki li'olam lo nimtza le'echad min ha'filosofim ve'lo l'shum choker she'asig l'malas ha'nevuah. You'll find, history has shown, that neither philosophers nor scientists ever reached the maila of nevuah. What is nevuah? V'hu yidabe karuach ha'eloki imasechel ha'noshi, the union of the Ruach Eloki and the Seichel Anoshi. K'moshe nimtza l'bali ha-Torah shenidbak sichbam b'shem dibuk chazak, etc., etc. So philosophers and scientists, they don't achieve that linking of the Ruach Eloki and the Seichel Anoshi. Why? A person will only find what they're looking for. And they're bound by that which they look for. If you're looking only at Metzias, then you're going to be bound by Metzias. That's what you'll see. Everything in the world that you see will need to be explained in Metzias Dika terms. If your tools are microscopes and telescopes, you'll never discover Ruchnius. The Ramban writes, that was the fundamental chisaron of the Greeks. Last week we read about how the Ramban says, Al korcheinu nam in l'dibrei yavanim. Okay, they had a lot of intelligent things to say, but they're also fundamentally flawed. Why? Take a look. Kiyinu tzrichim lachsom piha meschakmim b'teva, hanimshachim acharei yavani. It's referring to Aristotle. Asher hikchish kol davar zulasim urgashlo. What was so bad about the Greek scientists, philosophers? Their approach denied anything that they couldn't apprehend with the senses. V'giz da'ato lachshov hu v'talmidav harishaim, ki kol inyan shelo isig elav, hu v'svaraso, einenu emes. In other words, there was a tremendous chutzpah here. The chutzpah is saying that if I can't see it, if I can't detect it, then it doesn't exist. And that's a tremendous gaiva. Maybe you don't detect it just because you don't have the right tools, the right instruments. I sometimes think about this when I hear the word subatomic. Because what's an atom? An atom is the smallest unit, right? Something that can no longer be broken down. And that's, you know, there was the atomic theory of the universe. And then they had better tools. So they discovered, but atoms could be further broken down. And then later, what they thought were the subatomic particles could be further broken down. So there's subatomic. Subatomic is a tarti desasri, because if it's atomic, then you can't have a subatomic. But no, right? More tools, better tools. And that's all in the scientific realm, which is just a very small way of looking at that which exists. It's like, you know, somebody saying, I discovered that there's no such thing as a soul. Why? Well, because we now have fMRIs and we took them and we didn't see any soul. So it's pashut. You're shota. So what are we seeing? That we have to look at the world from two perspectives. And this brings us to this week's parsha and Avraham's discovery of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as the way the Kuzari puts it, the difference between the God of Avraham and the God of Aristotle. So how did Avraham Avinu discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Medrash tells us that he made an argument, cosmological argument. Amar Reb Yitzchak, Mashal Adam, Shayover Mimakom Lamakom, Vira Bira Achas Delakas. Amar Tomar Abira Zu below Manik. So he sees a Bira Delakas. It's interesting. You could translate that as a illuminated Bira or a Bira on fire, which have different connotations, but it's each one, I think there's a different dahar to look, learn from it, but we'll leave that for now. But what I'll point out, though, is right, it's not just, he saw a building and said, there needs to be a builder. He saw Bira Dolakas, because it's not just a matter of finding a builder. It's a manhig, right? Avraham Avinu didn't just say there was a builder. God created the world and left it, but there's a manhig. Because it's a Bira Dolakas. It's on fire. So he says, Tomer Shabira Zu below Manik. And Agav, that relates to the Resha of this Medrash, right? He was over me makom lamakom. Why is that important? Because Avraham was searching. He was looking. Anyway, for now, we'll leave that. It's also an important point. Hetz it's a love bala bira. Amar lo. Ani hu bal habira. Kach lefishaya Avraham Avinu omer tomer sha'olam hazeh b'lo manhig. Hetzitz alav HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'amar lo. Ani hu bal ha'olam. So there's a very interesting point here. The Medrash, first of all, highlights the value of proof. Right? How did Avraham Avinu come to an awareness of the existence of God? Through a logical argument, teleological argument. But it didn't end there. It turned into a conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It developed into a relationship. And this is a central idea in the Kuzari. The Kuzari, next source over here, points out, he contrasts a person who believes in God solely based off of philosophical proof to the person who has a relationship with God, or as Kuzari puts it, the difference between the God of Aristotle and the God of Avraham. Aristotle believed in God. If you look at his 12th book of Metaphysics, he says what God is. There must be an immortal, unchanging being, ultimately responsible for all wholeness and orderliness in a sensible world. God embodies absolute perfection. He's the unmoved mover. He's perfectly beautiful, contemplating only perfect contemplation, whatever that means. But what does he lack? So we talked about a couple weeks ago, by definition, he lacks ratzon. He couldn't have created the world. That would imply some type of chisaron. He's just the unmoved mover. It's not shayach tefillah. It's not shayach conversation with prophets. It's not shayach interaction with the world. Avraham Avinu's God is totally different. He speaks to man. He cares about the world. He's involved in the world. He destroys the city of stone. He redeems the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. He loves Avraham, and Avraham loves him. And Rabbi Yehuda Halevi explains that this explains so many things. Well, let's start with how we call God, God's name. So the Kuzari writes that the concept of an intimate relationship with God was Avraham's great invention. And that's reflected in the fact that we refer to God by the Shem Havaya, which is a name, as opposed to just calling him God or Elohim. Elohim is the God of Aristotle. It's abstract. It's impersonal. There's no relationship. Bereishis bara Elohim. It's the God of creation. But the Shem Havaya is a personal name. It's not just a title or a description. You don't call your friend friend. You call them by their name. And so Avraham Avinu refers to God by the Shem Havaya. Let's take a look over here. Amar Kuzari, Hinein Izbar Li HaEfresh Bein Shemos Elokim VaHashem. V'Avinosi Marav HaMerchak Ben Elokei Avraham Uvein Elokei Aristo. Ki LaHashem Yis'ale Mishtokekim Bnei Adam Shiasiguhu B'chush V'Al Yisod Eidos Ria V'Ilu Elokim Notain, notim alpi hekesh hagyoni. Elohim. That's just, you know, philosophical speculation. I could bring you proof for the existence of God. Proof for existence of God shows that God exists. It does. But not more. It's not the basis of a relationship. Take a look. Is a little bit earlier, the next piece. Amar HaChaver, Ein Shem Meduyak Yosef HaChashuv Yoser Min HaShem HaNechbad Ba'os Yos Yudke Vavke Yisbarach V'Yisroman. Zehu Shem Prati Bo Romzim La'loka Lo B'Toar HaMako Kedach Sheromzim L'chol Mitu'ar B'Yolti Yadua V'lo B'Tarim V'lo B'Hachlala K'V'Shem HaKlali Elokim Kiim b'shem hamiyuchad lo, shekein hu nikra Hashem al derech hayichud. Kiilu shal ha-shoel, mihu Elokim sheyesh lavdo, Hashemesh, o yarech, o shamayim, o mezalos, o echo mekochavim, o eish, o ruach, o amalachim, o ruchnim, o zuzasam. Kiilu l'chol achad me'el ha-pula mishalo v'shalto mishalo. L'chol achad me'em siba lehis havos dvarim ule'af sam. V'al zeh ba ha-tshuva. Hashem, Kilu amarta ploni, karasalo b'shem prati, Ruven, Shimon. Of course, the Shem Abai is mirames to all sorts of different things. I over the and Adon Kol. But in its most basic level, what is it? It's a name. It's like Ruven and Shimon. The Rav, in Lonely Man of Faith especially, develops this idea of the Kuzari. And he uses it to explain the two different creation narratives. The first chapter of Bereishis says the Kuzari was Medayik, describes the creation of man very differently from the second chapter. And the Rav very famously says that we could think of two different archetypes. There's Adam 1, which is the person described in the first chapter of Bereishis that was created, and Adam 2, who's in the second chapter. The first chapter, like the Kuzari notes, refers to God as Elohim. In the second chapter, there's the introduction of the Shem Havaya. So Adam 1 only relates to cosmic God. What about Adam 2? He studies the universe with the naivete, awe, and admiration of the child who seeks the unusual and wonderful in every ordinary thing and event. He looks for the image of God, not in the mathematical formula or the natural rational law, but in every beam of light, in every bud and blossom, in the morning breeze, and in the stillness of a starlit evening. Adam 1 uses his practical intellect and scientific ability to comprehend the forces of nature and to tame them. Adam 2 is not so grandiose. He's humble. He realizes he was created from the dust of the earth. He allows himself to be overpowered by God. Adam 1 is distant. He relates to God as this creator. Adam 2 experiences a genuine living experience of God. He's preoccupied. Ein Shem. But this, in a sense, goes back to what we're talking about. There's the Siba and there's the Siba Sasiba. There are two reasons why the Teva had to be insulated on the inside and the outside. You could look at it from a Metzias difficult perspective, and there's one answer. Why is it that the scientist will never discover God? Or if you do, sorry, it's not true, we will discover God. Why is it that the scientist will never have nevuah? Because the scientist isn't looking for anything other than the physical. He's not looking for ruchnius. There's no terms in the scientific lexicon for ruchnius. So of course he's not going to find it. It's not to say that there's no value in studying science. There is. The Haraya, look, Rashi told you the Siba and the Siba Sasiba. But if all you're looking for is the Siba, then that's all you'll find. You're not going to discover the Siba Sasiba. So that's what the Kuzari is saying. You can discover the existence of God from science, from philosophy. But what will you discover? You'll discover Aristotle's God. You'll discover God that exists, that's responsible for all that exists. That's Kol Yachol. But you'll never have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That you can't discover with scientific proof. A lot of times they do these seminars and the like where they'll try to prove the existence of God. And, you know, these are popular for high school kids and they'll have all these arguments. And even if they're very good arguments, whether they are or not is different issue, but even if they're totally good, 100%. But what do they show you? They prove Aristotle's God. They don't prove our God. So that's not to say that there's no value. There might be value. But you have to understand the limitations. You have to understand that that's not really what we're looking at. That's not what emunah is all about. Emunah is not just belief in the existence of Aristotle's God, but in having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is what Avraham Avinu discovered. That was the chiddush of Avraham Avinu. I'd like to elaborate a little more, but let me take some questions. So, Maximilian.
Hello. Hey, good seeing you again. I wanted to ask in relation, so I understand very much that, like specifically in the relationship between, I guess, to use the words Adam 1 and Adam 2, in that you'll see what you're looking for. The point that we're trying to get from the Torah is very much the Adam 2, the personal God in a lot of ways, and trying to see that relationship. What I want to know is a response to people who very much I know a lot of people who really are much like you just described. They go to the seminars, they're really only caring about Adam 1 in a sense. They want to prove that God is there in some way. So is this approach that sort of splits them, giving a certain amount of chashivas to Adam 2, and that that's the main point? And if you could sort of care about Adam 1, but we don't really care so much about that. What would we say that it's just an outgrowth of necessity and not some people need it, but it's not a chiyuv in a certain way?
I think it's a very good question. And I think there's room for different approaches here. I don't think, some people are naturally more scientific and some people are more spiritual. And I think both types of people could be wonderful Jews. The Rambam offers four proofs for the existence of God. He thought they were valuable. And it's clear he thought they're valuable not just to get someone to believe, but even someone who is a born believer, it's valuable to be able to prove God's existence. And so I don't think that there is one right approach. First of all, certainly there might be value in the proofs just to get you started. And look, that's how Avraham Avinu got started. The point that the Kuzari is making is it didn't end there. They had a conversation. But even afterwards, there, it's not the Mahalich we're going to be working on today, the Mahalich of the Rambam. But there's definitely a Mahalich that sees a tremendous value in being able to prove something. Today, we're looking at the approach of the Kuzari, as the Rav liked to frequently quote from Kierkegaard, that it's absurd that someone who's in the loving embrace of with their lover starts asking and wondering about whether they exist or not. So there's for the person who does feel that way, then it does seem like an absurd question. But again, there's not one correct approach to emunah. And in one approach, which again, we're focusing on today from the Kuzari, once you've discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now you're embracing him, so it's almost silly to then go back and say, well, how could I prove he exists? But that's not the only Mahalich.
Okay. Thank you.
Mordechai.
Hi, Rabbi. So I guess based on the fact that we're saying that Abraham seemingly discovered Baruch Hu through this second way, by the Siva Sasiba. So that imply that's the only thing we need then? Like, if Abraham is solely connecting through that, obviously, and based on the Medrash, he first has the cosmological, but at the end of the day, he came to that realization. So seemingly Rashi saying we need both, but seemingly based on Abraham, maybe you don't necessarily need both.
So I think you can't be medayik that from the Medrash about Avram Avinu that says he has both. Again, I don't. There's differing mahalchim of emuna that we find in our Rishonim and our teachers. One mahalich is exactly what you're saying, which is that once you're in that loving embrace, it seems absurd to start wondering how you know he actually exists. There's another mahalich, which again, we could talk about another week, the approach of the Rambam, for example, that sees tremendous value in being able to prove, even if you're not plagued by doubts. And like you're saying before, being able to see the world both from Nesiba and Nesiba Sasiba. Obviously, for most people who live in this world, maybe there's some special tzaddikim who inhabit this world but don't really live in it and only relate to the Siba Sasiba and not the Siba. But for the rest of us, so we do. We live in a physical world and we have to relate to that Metzias. And so we're not Somech al Hanes. And we go to doctors and we study science and we try to discover the physical cause for physical ailments, even as we're aware that there's something much deeper. Whether that translates into our approach to emuna or not, there are different approaches to that question. And I'm not here to be machria. What we're doing today is looking at the mahalich of the Kuzari. So let's continue a little bit in the Kuzari. As we said before, if you take this philosophical approach, so you can prove that there is a deity, but it doesn't demonstrate that he hears us or interacts with us. And that can only be known through prophecy. So the Kuzari writes, this is where it says Dalad Gimel. Amar Kuzari. When we say Kuzari, it means the king, right? The book called that we call Kuzari, it's not actually its name, is a conversation between the king of the Khazars and the Chaver. It's written by Rabbi Yehuda Levi. There was actually a historical event where the king of the Khazars in Khazaria, he, along with much of his nation, converted to Judaism. That story took place several centuries before Rabbi Yehuda Levi. Yehuda Levi recreates what that conversation, what that debate might have looked like. So it begins with the king of the Khazars. He has this dream, a repeating dream, that tells him that your intent is good, but not your actions. And so he calls a philosopher and a Christian theologian and a Muslim theologian, and you know he tries to figure out the truth. And he doesn't call a Jew because they're the despised faith. Why would anyone be interested in them? But he seems to discover that actually the other religions are rooted in Judaism. So maybe it makes sense to invite a Jew. And he invites him. And the Chaver, who represents the Jew, eventually convinces him. He converts. And the book ends with his plan to make Aliyah. So when we see when it says Amar Kuzari, it means the king. As I said, it's a conversation. So the Eich Akra B'Shem Miyuchad Es She'en L'Rmoz Alav the Chora Iosa Re'iyasi Elav Mipulosafi. So how could I call a name to something that I can't point to? The way we know God exists is through his actions. So does a name make sense? And the response is, Yesh v'yesh alav remez, be'edus hanevua ubereiyas halev. No, we can see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't see him with our eyes, but we see him with our heart. And certainly someone who's Zocha to Nevuah. Ki havas harayos mita'eh, mimenu noldu haminos vashitos hanifsados. When you look for rayos, proof, so that misleads, it could lead to heresy for many reasons. It leads to heresy because then person could say, well, if I have a hole in the proof, then God doesn't exist. But it leads to heresy also because it creates a false impression of what God is. We're almost out of time, so I don't want to read this whole paragraph. Take a look. It's very fundamental. And the Khazari actually, in the next paragraph that you have here, talks about, very interesting, the history of how his name became known and then how it became forgotten, which relates to these early parshios. I want to skip a little bit to talk about sacrifice, because this is something that also explains the parshios we're in, the idea of Avram Avinu having 10 Nisyonos, and why it's especially Avram Avinu who has the Nisyonos. You see, a person who believes in God based off of philosophy will rarely be interested in giving his life, even for something that he knows is true. You know, Lamashal, let's say there's a king who says, I'm going to kill anyone who doesn't declare his belief to something that is clearly false, right? The king goes ahead and says, Chevra, that sometimes the hypotenuse of a triangle is longer than its sides. And I want everyone to declare that fact. And if you don't, so I'll kill you. So a rational person will probably not give up his life, because what does that accomplish? Now, what's the point? It's obviously false, but what's the point? So it's the same thing. Someone who knows of God only through philosophy, his intellectual awareness of God's existence. So why would you sacrifice for God? God's a concept. It's an idea, but nothing more. But that's not true, of course, if you have a relationship with God. If God is the object of your greatest love, so that naturally inspires sacrifice. And that's what he writes. Mi she hisigu b'chush b'alidei mesiris nefesh mitoch avas alokav lidei nechonos lamos aleha, the willingness to die for it. V'ilu hakesh mare rak zos ki chovahu l'romeim es alokav kol shah she'ina davar mazik b'ein sovlim tzarelav. Ein la shemefo es aristo al haliglug shaligleg al taxi. I don't remember this debate, but anyway, taxi avodas aloka me'achar shu mesupak im aloa yodea beza. In other words, Aristotle didn't believe in Greek idolatry, mythology, all that stuff, but it's okay to let it go. What's the big deal, right? Because God doesn't know or even care about it. And so that's why Avram Avinu was tested. The Akedas Yitzchak writes about that. The purpose of a Nisayon, especially Akedas Yitzchak, his willingness to sacrifice the son who he loved more than anything else, reflects that his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't just cerebral. It was an intimate relationship. It's interesting. The Chassid Yaivitz, so the Chassid Yaivitz, it's not Rav Yaakov Emden, it's more than one Yaivitz. He was from the Gerushei Sfarad. And he makes this observation that those who were put to the ultimate test, those whose emuna was rooted in philosophy, generally failed. And those ignorant people whose emuna was deep in their hearts, so they made the ultimate sacrifice. So again, to summarize, there's two reasons why someone who accepts only the God of Aristotle would not give up their life. First of all, because if your faith rests entirely in reason, so why would you sacrifice? And even if you could sacrifice, but why would? It's irrational. In other words, your belief is based off of logic. So giving up your life is the height of irrationality. So going back to the beginning of the Medrash, that how Avram discovers HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what the Kuzari writes, that Avram Avinu went through a transition. He started off discovering God through Tomar Shabira Zu below Manhig, but then it changed. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to him. And at that point, there was no basis for this. Now, a question that you could ask here is there value in science and philosophy? That's true. A lot of times the Kuzari is looked at as an anti-rationalist. If you take a look at the Makoros I gave you here, I don't think we have time to read them inside, but you'll see that that's sort of an oversimplification of what he thinks about philosophy. He actually thinks that given their tools, the philosophers fared quite well, because they lacked a tradition, they weren't exposed necessarily to revelation. So using speculation alone, the fact that they discovered God is impressive. And he writes that to those of them who were humble and intellectually honest, they acknowledged that limitation and accomplished a great deal. Because the intellect is a tremendous gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. He just thinks that for the Jewish people who have something that the philosophers lacked, they experienced revelation. If they're not Nevi'im, they're B'nai Nevi'im. So then what purpose does philosophy have? And while the Kuzari doesn't make this point, other thinkers, especially the Gra, make a similar point. In other words, if we think about what's the relationship between Kabbalah or mysticism and philosophy, so mysticism, which is rooted in revelation, in a sense, it begins where philosophy ends. That's what the Gra writes. In a sense that it this is what, I'll just read you. It's from Orchos Chaim, Keserosh, Samech Aleph. Philosophia, Amar Rabbeinu, so that's referring to the Gra, Shemimakom Shemistaima Philosophia, Misham Ulemala Maschil Chachmas HaKabbalah. Umimakom Shemistaim Kabbalah Saramak, with Moshe Cordovero, Misham Ulemala Maschil Kabbalah Sari. So we'll leave out the second statement for now. There is, philosophy could get you pretty far. Science could get you pretty far. And there's truth, like we started with. It is a siba, and the siba is MS. It only gets you so far. There's also the siba sasiba. So Kabbalah is trying to teach you that siba sasiba. It doesn't undermine science. It's not a stira to science, like we talked about last week. It's interested in an utterly different agenda. In a sense, there's physics and there's metaphysics. There's what goes beyond physics. And the Kuzari actually says something interesting. He writes, that's the pshat in Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. And that might even be why, you know, the world was created, but Klal Yisrael only came up on the scene later. And certainly it's true that laws, science, Derech Eretz, are necessary for society. And the point is that the Torah's divine laws build upon those rational laws, and they get you to where you're supposed to go. All right, so I guess we'll stop here. I think next week we'll start a new sugya. I think we'll talk about the Tamei HaMitzvos. So everyone should have a good Shabbos, and I'll see you around.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, Shabbos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi. Good Shabbos.
Thank you.
Hi, Rabbi. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I was wondering, because I personally find the Kuzari's idea and like of the basis for belief in Hashem being revelation, I find that to be very compelling. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering what one can respond to, let's say, somebody who hears that argument, but then says, like, how do we, like, what's the proof of revelation? They don't find it compelling of, like the idea of Torah Misinai, even with mass revelation, and they would argue that, like, how do we know that it wasn't just, like, man-made?
Yeah, that's a very good question. First of all, I point out that's not our topic really so much for today. I mean, it relates to it. I think the two points in the Kuzari are related. But even that argument, the famous argument of the Kuzari, is an argument of proof, right? Which is very different from what we're learning today, which is that we're trying to get beyond proof. In terms of how to answer those types of questions, it's a good question. I think there are answers, though. Person, when using them, has to acknowledge their limitations. I hope Be'ezus Hashem, not sure when, but I'd like to do a shiur on that topic itself, how to, you know, proofs, pros, cons, what they could do, what their limitations are, and we'll talk specifically about the approach of the Kuzari. So Be'ezus Hashem will have the chance to get back to that more fully.
Okay, thank you so much. I've really, really been enjoying this shiur so far.
Okay. Baruch Tia, thank you so much. Okay, have a good Shabbos.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.